6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris at Lightforce, joined virtually as always by the psyched It's Monday, Anna Forsyth at A4Say03. Welcome, Anna.
I am psyched It's Monday. I'm not psyched It's Monday because of work, but then that's a podcast, so, you know, swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, right? I get mad that I have to get off for work in the morning, but, you know, this is a good end to a weekday.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, for me, Mondays are tough, and they always have been, and I think part of the issue is that, like, I obviously like sort of the weekend, but then there's this transition from Sunday to Monday. It's like I need that third day.
Yeah.
And if I had like a Friday off or a Monday off, I think that's right. I remember when I worked for the local cable company, in one of the departments that I had, we were on like this rotational shift. And the way that my shift would rotate is that every 6 weeks I'd have a 4-day weekend. The trade-off is I had 2 1-day weekends. based on how the transition occurred, but I get this 4-day weekend, and 4 was too much. I honest to goodness, it was like that 4th day off.
I was just
I want to get back to work.
That's Matt. I was just talking about this because so every place I've worked in Canada, like 3 or 4, maybe 5 places have given us both Good Friday and Easter Monday off, even though it's just Good Friday that's a stat. And for the first time, I will have to work on Easter Monday, and it sucks. I just love the 4-day weekend because you just, like, 3-day weekends are great, but, like, when you get to the end of, like, Saturday and you're like, oh my god, I'm only halfway, like, I have 2 more days. Like, that's just glorious. And it would annoy me maybe if I had it more than, like, every few months, but yeah, I don't know. I think we should have a 4-day work week. So,
yeah. So like when I worked for the cable company, they gave us both Good Friday, Easter Monday off. And when I had that one off 4-day weekend, or depending on like how Christmas fell, I could get like 4 days off type thing there. That was like an okay, like I really enjoyed it. But then when this rotation kicked in, and maybe it ties into the fact that to get into the 4-day weekend, I had to have a 1-day weekend before the
two-week
rotation and a one-day weekend on the way out. And so maybe that had more to do with it. But it was just, 3 days. 3 days was really good. You know what's really good is that we have a new supporter of our show. Someone signed up for a 1-year membership on support.c4podcast.com or buy me a coffee. Big friend of the show. And I mean, in a proverbial sense, because Neil Nexus, as you know him in chat, has been a longtime listener, supporter of C4. He has been with us from like the beginning, and if not the beginning, soon after. But he has, kicked in a yearly membership. So I got to give him a huge shout out for helping us keep the lights on.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that. But I mean, he is also tall, so that checks out for like friend of the show as well. He is one of life's gentle giants, which you might not know if you only know him through Discord. That gentle adjective might not seem like it fits, but it does. He's a good guy. Yeah. So thanks, Neil.
We got Neil, we got your mom, Rich. The three of them are helping us keep the lights on. And if you've heard ads on our show, we've said this before, but if you've heard ads on the show, we get absolutely squat from them. They simply pay for hosting with the network, the Full Press Coverage Network. And then what the network provides us is an extensive sort of level of exposure, which in the content creation world doesn't translate into the money that pays the bills, unfortunately. So it's only you, our listeners, who you know, support us through, you know, BMAC that that help us, you know, cover costs. And, I, you know, someone actually asked me once, well, why the heck do you stay with them if there's ads because you get nothing from it? You should leave. Well, it's not as easy as just pushing a button, because honestly, I probably would have pushed it. I mean, you and I have talked about this before where
they don't listen to us. It's really, fine.
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is we truly appreciate your support. And if you were wondering like, hey, you know, how can I do this? You can either go to support.c4podcast.com where once you're there, you can either chip in a one-off where you're like, hey, here's a few bucks. Thanks. You can commit to us on a monthly basis. I believe it's like $5 a month.
Yeah.
Or you can commit to a full year and you get a discount that way. Yeah. And
if that scares one you, do the one-off, do the monthly. Like, we'll appreciate anything.
I mean, you could send us a loonie. And hey, that loonie helps you know, cover the cost of Squadcast, the application that you and I use to record our show. We've got the hosting costs, which I was actually looking at our books. It's tax time and all of that. And years ago, we were actually in a really good spot. And, yeah, you know, hindsight being 2020, when we were approached by that original network who convinced us, hey, this is the future, I don't know if we jump at it. We were sold a lot of, you know, sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah. But also, like, yeah, there's so much hindsight. Like, the pandemic has obviously changed things as well. So,
yeah. And that's part of it. I don't mean to knock that. Like, we went in eyes wide open. And then, unfortunately, due to a variety of circumstances, came out of it needing some corrective lenses.
Yeah. So we appreciate everything and anything you guys throw our way.
Exactly. Do we appreciate the fact that the Vancouver Canucks are currently under a, I don't know what you would call it, with Rick Tocchet, where they are doing their damnedest to miss the playoffs by a point or two? Is that something we appreciate?
Yeah. I mean, I guess we have no choice but to bear it.
Mm-hmm. Is that like a play on the word and name, or was that just...
No, it was not meant to be Ethan Bear. But like, I'm not that smart.
Okay. Well, anyhow, we're going to get into all of that in a short moment as we dive into the rewind. When we spoke last, I had suggested that the Vancouver Canucks had some wins that they needed to cash in on. I had said that I thought that the Vancouver Canucks could probably win three of the four games. That might have been maybe more bold of a statement than I should have made. But hey, this current iteration of the Vancouver Canucks is a world-beating team. And they did what I had asked. In fact, they did it handily in one of the games, granted against a team that, you know, had some issues. Yeah, Canucks go. Drop a 4-3 game to the Knights. They beat the Sharks 7-2. They beat the Stars 3-1. And they beat the Blackhawks 4-2. The Bedard sweepstakes all but over.
Yeah. I mean, I think we can call it at this point, like, not quite dead, but pretty much. I mean, looking down the stretch, like, there was some very weak opposition. So, I guess, should we be shocked? Maybe not really, but they've certainly done more than I expected.
Yeah, I'm conflicted. So my aunt and uncle were in town. They're big Calgary Flames fans, being that that's sort of the area that they're from. And we were watching the Canucks on Saturday take on the Stars, and the Stars, you know, score that goal to take that lead, and my uncle's sort of giving it to me, and I'm like, nah, I'm okay. That's fine. The closer that the Vancouver Canucks can get to that really, you know, slim possibility of a lottery, you know, win, I'm happy. And it's as if I cursed myself with the hockey gods, because Dakota Joshua goes and gets a goal, then followed by Brock Besser. Jack Rathbone gets his first.
Yeah.
And the Canucks win 3-1. And, you know, he then, Christopher revisits, like, oh, hey, the Canucks won. Like, are you sure you're not happy? I'm like, well, no, I want my team to win. But I have resigned myself to the fact that winning at this point serves to reinforce the, hey, look, this team can perform well. We've got some good pieces. Really excited about next year, until next year comes and then the team falls apart.
Totally.
Which has happened four seasons coming up. Like,
why not? Let's talk about it now. That concerns me more than the Connor Bedard sweepstakes, honestly. Maybe because it's just not realistic. The Canucks were aiming for a mushy middle always. But yeah, that's the more concerning long-term pattern, right? Like, even they're talking now about, like, oh, what if Tocchet was there from the start of the season? Would Canucks be in the position they're in? It's just like, we had no goaltending for half the season. Like, I just don't buy that, like, Rick Tocchet is the savior and solver of all our problems. Because, guess what? Bruce Boudreau was the same.
Yeah. That you know, I heard someone going on about how, you know, it's very clear that the Vancouver Canucks, you know, started the wrong way. They had a horrible camp, the bad start to the season. Okay, sure. I'm willing to, you know, accept all of those statements as fact. It's very clear they had a bad start. What might have caused it? Maybe it was camp. Maybe it was the roster of players. Maybe it was the distraction of, hey, when's Bruce coming back? Because, I mean, the team self-inflicted that one right from, what, the second week of the season, I want to say, whenever it was that Trader Jim was on after hours. Like, okay, so you're creating your own problems. And maybe if that had been sorted out before the start of the season, Rick Tocchet had somehow been brought in sooner, maybe things are different. But you have the same roster of players that Bruce had success with, that arguably Travis had success with. And in both scenarios, the start of the fall, you know, subsequent season was garbage. We know, as you pointed out, the Vancouver Canucks rely on a goaltender that's hot.
Yeah.
Maybe they can get by with sort of lukewarm, but that's not what they got the moment Demko went down. And even before that, because he was probably hurt in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's like butterfly effect, right? You'd have no idea if Rush Tucker was there, like, how would have players performed. But I want, for example, JT Miller, and we can talk about how good he's been in the last 2 weeks, but I want people to look at that as, like, that's not the norm. That's, like, the exception. This is him having a moment. Maybe it continues to next season, but it's not going to last. Like, it's just not. It's not sustainable. Kuzmenko looks great. Is that sustainable for more than a couple years? No. Like,
statistics show he's punching well above his weight class right now, which is great. Exactly.
I'd be shocked if it lasts to the fall. Like, I don't know. I find it just so hard to believe that this is more like, sustainable run.
Yeah. I struggle with seeing how is this team different than the one Bruce had the end of the last season. And I mean, there's someone listening to the show right now, like, okay, Chris, you obviously aren't a fan. You don't pay attention. They got rid of Bo. They brought in all these great players because Kuzmenko isn't in the picture. And that is all very true. And you could also argue that the problems they have on the blue line could very well be remedied somewhat with a, you know, a Ronick addition. But the big elephant that is continuing to remain, you know, stuffed well under the rug, because no one notices the massively, you know, out of place lump that is there, the cap situation, is still a problem. And the Vancouver Canucks still require this major surgery to take place. You know, it's like they had major surgery when they traded their captain. They got rid of the pick that they ended up acquiring from that to get Ronick, but then they still need major surgery to solve their cap-related issues. And what might that entail? Might it be a Besser? Was it Cervelli, I think, had commented that there is still a sense that the team is trying to offload JT Miller before the contract kicks in?
I'm not sure. It was definitely Frank that was talking about that a lot of the deadline, so maybe that he has the line on that. I mean, yeah, like you're talking about the cap situation, like, let's not forget that our huge, giant, like, anchor of a contract, OEL, is not playing right now. And his, you know, young, cheap replacements are doing better than him. Apparently there's, I don't remember who was reporting it today, Farhan maybe? That there's, at the moment, no appetite to buy him out, but we'll see.
Oh, well, I mean, if you're going to buy a player out, let's say you buy OEL, the Vancouver Canucks do see a little bit of savings there, but is the owner willing to go and pay for that contract until the end of time? I could see there being some hesitance there. But if there is something that, you know, we do need to give the family credit for doing is they are willing to spend so long as there's not a pandemic. During the pandemic, it was like, we're cash poor. Let's not spend anything. But leading up to it, they were willing to spend. Maybe they'd be willing to continue to spend on a move forward basis. I didn't realize that the Vancouver Canucks currently have 6 players on long-term injured reserve.
Yeah. So
that's the cap space.
Yeah. Like, but
wow.
Like, you've got to think that they're like planning on Mikheyev coming back. Like, he should be starting the season, right? That's the plan. Tanner Pearson hopefully is as well. Tucker Pullman and Michael Ferland. You know, we'll see. But yeah. Travis Dermott, again, we'll see. But like, you know, 3 of those players are going to be back on that opening night roster, you would think.
Unless, obviously, you know, a trade were to occur, though Pearson and Mikheyev both have MNTCs.
Yeah.
And Pearson with a 7 team and Mikheyev with a 12 team.
And I don't think there's much appetite to get rid of Mikheyev, like, given the investment in him. And, you know, he's such a high profile kind of player that they acquired, so they're kind of taking their chance on him.
You know, well, let's say hypothetically those 3 players are back on the roster next season and they are all healthy. I mean, we're almost making a big stretch there, because as we've seen, players who go on LTIR in Vancouver don't seem to fare so well there. But looking at the
It's like $15,000. Like, sorry, $15 million. $15,000. That would be good.
It's 10-5. 10-5 is those 3 players on the LTIR, because Michael Ferland is off the books as of next year.
Correct. Yeah. No, sorry. Yeah, I was just putting together Mikheyev, Pearson, and
Well, I guess sorry, I wasn't talking about OEL, because OEL is actually on LTIR. He's only on IR right now.
IR, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, like, so his 7-6 counts.
Yeah, his 7-6 counts, and like, it's gonna count next year and the year after that, and the year after that. Like, there's no world in which he gets traded. Like, there's just like, as unlikely as a JT Miller trade is, like, OEL is just impossible, I would say.
Yeah. The let's say, you know, OEL comes back, doesn't get traded, doesn't get bought out. First of all, your blue line will have a 7.85 player, a 6 player, a 7.26 player, and a 4.4 player. So, I mean, doing the Chris can't add up to 3 math here, we got ourselves a solid $26 million tied up in 4 players on the blue line. And that blue line doesn't feel to me to be as good as the one that's currently on the ice skating at 20.6. So, like, it's considerably lower with 6 players on the ice.
Yeah.
Than the 4.
Yeah, like, it's rough reading. And I know usually we're like, rewind is like, we're not getting too pessimistic because we're only talking about a week and we've kind of gone on to talk about everything, but it's hard not to see the context of results in like terms of long term, right? Because we're kind of saying, yeah, like, okay, good for you. You beat San Jose handily. Like, San Jose are plummeting through the standings. They have a terrible goalie who is also a terrible human.
I was going to say, a terrible goalie is a terrible goalie.
Yeah. Speaking of another, like, lame Pride Night, Chicago, like, they're doing badly, but it's like, there's a purpose to this, right? Like, Chicago are 30th, like, in the league. San Jose are last. Like, they must be officially eliminated from playoff contention now as well. So, Canucks are mushy middling their way through life, as with most things. Yeah.
Actually, let me just take a look at the division standings. It's NHL. The NHL hasn't gone and updated their... Oh, no, they have. They've updated as to the teams that have clinched playoff spots. They have not indicated on NHL.com those that have been eliminated.
But Columbus were already eliminated, so San Jose.
Yeah, but they're, and I knew that, but they're not indicating it, so.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe they don't like to celebrate that on NHL.com. Weird.
The teams that are done. you know, it's funny because, like, my wife was asking me, like, do the Vancouver Canucks still have a chance to make the playoffs? I'm like, yeah, they totally do. The Canucks are actually in a position where if they were to go and continue, you know, winning games at the pace they are, they're making a team like the Jets, the Flames, and the Predators, the three in front of them, a little bit uncomfortable, simply because the Canucks are putting themselves into a position of doing what is considered unthinkable. Now, in the likelihood that the Vancouver Canucks go and catch up the 12-point deficit that they currently have between themselves and the Jets is highly unlikely, even with that game in hand.
Yeah.
But that, you know, if the Canucks continue winning and, you know, a team like Winnipeg and a team like Nashville were to stumble, you know, the Vancouver Canucks, you know, are starting to get within striking reach of a team like Calgary, who has their own sort of issues. And, you know, when you do get the wins against the San Jose Sharks, the teams you should beat, the games against, wins against the Chicago Blackhawks, the team you should beat, and, you know, knock off the Stars yet again, a team that maybe you shouldn't have beaten. Lo and behold, the Vancouver Canucks are, you know, on the verge of missing the playoffs by a point.
Yeah, that's it. Like, if we're in a different position, the, like, where the Canucks are right now, it should be really exciting. We should be going, oh God, like, look how Canucks are growing, like, under Tocchet. Like, this is great. But, like, we're not, because we've seen it all before. We've seen where the, like, Canucks still are. And what tools they have, limited tools they have in their arsenal. So, yeah.
Yeah. The, you know, performance that we're also seeing from players who, well, JT Miller and Petey have found their scoring lines because Benko continues to contribute. Besser is starting to see a Brocassance. But we're getting goals from third line, fourth line players. We're getting...
A Canucks
penalty kill that has become far more dangerous than their power play has been all season.
Yeah. It's like the penalty kill was so bad at defense, they just decided to be like, let's just try offense instead, and it seems to work. League leading in shorthanded goals.
Yeah. And just on that note, speaking of sustainability, Andrei Kuzmenko currently has a shot percentage of 26.7. Now, let's put this into perspective, because someone will say, oh, he hasn't maybe not played that many games. No, he's actually played 72. He's played one more game than Petey has this season. And he has, well, fewer points. Petey has 93. Kuzmenko has 66. That shooting percentage of 26.7 is nuts. That's not something you see typically last a very long time. Like, Petey's perspective, he's 15%. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Dakota Joshua right now, 18.3.
Of course.
He's actually number two on shot percentage in the team. 70 games played, 18.3.
Yeah.
Tyler Myers, 69 games played, 1.1. OEL, 54 games, 2.2. But Quinn, 69 games, 3.6. So, but that Quinn's not necessarily the shooter. He's the passer. Mm-hmm. And when you look at his point total, he got himself a ton of apples.
Yeah. Like, Quinn's doing fine. Yeah. We're not worried about Quinn. Yeah. And if you look at, yeah, Patterson versus Kuzmenko, like, Patterson's a proven scorer in the league. Another 35 goals this year so far, and, like, he's, yeah, 15% is high, but, like, he's proven. I think it's, is he not 15%? I swear I looked at that the other day, that he's 15% every year, or thereabouts.
Who, so, Petey? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I'd have to go and look at his stats year over year, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Because, again, that's a solid number.
Last year, 15.9 year before. Yeah. Like, he's consistent in the league. Like, Kuzmenko hasn't been here a season yet. Like, he's great, but, like, call your Jets, you know? But yeah, Kuzmenko isn't even someone I would say I'm worried about, right? You know? Yes, he is more of an expensive contract than I would like, but he's not the big anchor plummeting asset that you're worried about.
The I was actually just trying to look up for based on games played here. Let me just change this here. Let's say over the course of 50 games played. Get stats. Let's see. So right now, just with the shot percentage, with a minimum of 50 games played this season, Kuzmenko leads the league at 26.7. Now, Nick Dowd, he's 22.4.
Canucks legend.
So, but then you have like someone like Draisaitl, who's at 20.3. I mean, Jerry McCann.
Like, what is? Yeah, if like Draisaitl and McDavid are like, it's a lazy.
Well, that's what I was curious about. McDavid's 19.
Yeah,
right.
Like, if they're around 20, like 26 is insane.
Yeah, Jared McCann's currently at 19.9. He's having a heck of a season down there in Seattle. I mean, he's hindsight again, 2020. Would the Vancouver Canucks have been able to develop him as a player into the one he is now? Or is that based on the maturity that he's gained having been traded a number of times and ultimately left up for grabs? Who knows? But McCann is a solid player who.
I would say McCann
has turned out.
Definitely someone we gave up on very early. Like, yes, it seems like he was immature and had some issues to work on, but like.
Well, so was the other player that was brought into the league the same season as him. And look how that one turned out.
Yeah.
Edmonton's also got Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who's 18.3. In fairness, I poke fun at Edmonton. Edmonton's currently sitting third in the Pacific. Like, they're in a playoff position. They're comfortable as to where they happen to be. So, you know, the normal thing is you poke fun at Edmonton that they've got Draisaitl McDavid. I was going to say McCann, but I'm like, no, that's not it. McDavid.
Wow.
Scoring, like, league leaders 1 and 2 when they don't make the playoffs. Like, how is that possible? Two of the best players in the league don't make playoffs.
Connor McDavid really taken down a peg or two today. Just forgot his name. Well, I mean, he's so funny.
He is so good,
yeah.
But he just happens to play for, you know,
I'm actually Edmonton.
Like, 139 points currently. Draisaitl, 112.
Yeah.
Like, top two players in points in the league right now, and Edmonton is not at the top of their division. Like, it's unreal. Back to the Vancouver Canucks. Looking ahead, because they actually do have games to play still. We haven't even got into that.
Many, but
They're going to be against the Blues tomorrow, right? Which I guess for you listening to the show is probably today. And then they come home to take on the Flames on the Friday night. And then proceed to stay in town for the rest of their final homestand, where they kick things off on Sunday against the Kings at a 5 p.m. start. And then we'll obviously get into the rest of what's going to be happening next week. But, you know, when you look at the schedule here, the Vancouver Canucks play the Blues. You know, as far as the standings are concerned, this is a team who's conceivably not as good as Vancouver is right now. So, you know, do the Vancouver Canucks win that game?
I think it depends who's in that.
Oh, see, this is the thing. If it's Binnington, I want them to win.
I know.
Big.
I mean, that's the thing. That was me last... Like, on Thursday, I was at the game, like, Reimer was in net, like, of course I wanted Canucks to bury them, and it was so glorious having him there for all seven goals. Like, it was just chef's kiss, perfect way for that to work out. But yeah, Binnington's such a baby, it's hard, like, not to, it's hard not to root against him.
Yeah. Flames come to town. This is a team. So Calgary comes to Vancouver, and I would have to think they're concerned, because the last thing they want to do is, one, give up points, because they're currently outside looking in. They need to figure out how they're going to catch up to the Jets or the Kraken. And at the same time, that rear view mirror has a Predators team just a point behind them with two games in hand. And oh, hey, look at the Canucks, who are currently still, when we look at the last 10 over the course of the league, are right up there with 8 wins and 2 losses in the last 10. Like, it's
Canucks.
I'm not suggesting. Yeah, I'm not suggesting Vancouver's going to make the playoffs. Like, if they make the playoffs, the podcast is over, Anna.
It's over.
I hate to make this decision on your behalf, but I just don't know if I'll be able to continue recording the show if the Canucks make the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible, but
like, we're going to be a team playoff podcast either way, because Abbotsford Canucks have officially made the playoffs as of Sunday, so we are team playoffs for them. But yeah, it is bizarre. I do think, like, if we're making predictions, Canucks beat the Blues, lose to the Flames,
beat the Kings.
Usually I'd say no. Kings do have a back-to-back, and that's an early puck drop. I'm going to the Kings game on Saturday night. Seattle Kraken, LA Kings. I'll be checking out what they have to offer. Yeah, down there, south of the border. So that should be interesting. Good research. So yeah, usually I'd say LA would win. That's not a great turnaround. I'm still bunking on LA.
I was just looking at the Flames schedule. So they actually play the Kings at home on Tuesday. They then come to Vancouver, play the Canucks on Friday. They then proceed to go back home, where they play the Ducks and the Blackhawks before hitting the road for a Wednesday nighter, back-to-back to the home game against the Blackhawks. But, you know, Winnipeg's pretty close. In Winnipeg on Wednesday. And then they're back in Vancouver to wrap up the Vancouver Canucks homestand and probably... last game in the Rog for the season,
probably,
and then go home for two more. But it's interesting that the Flames have to play the Vancouver Canucks twice,
yeah,
both in Vancouver within a week.
But did you say they also get to play the Blackhawks twice? Like,
Blackhawks? No, Blackhawks just the one time.
But yeah, like,
they got the Canucks twice. That's it. The only in the next the rest of the season. Canucks twice, Flames play the Ducks, the Blackhawks, the Jets, the Predators, the Sharks, yeah. Kings.
Yeah, I mean, there's three easy wins right there in Ducks, Sharks, Blackhawks.
Yeah. And I'm but sure they're also having to,
Vancouver would have again, been
yeah, catch up to that Jets team, so they want to win that one.
Yeah,
they got the Predators Price behind. Like, I feel the Flames are in the driver's seat here. Even if the Canucks win it out,
yeah,
the Flames. The Flames should have 6 points guaranteed out of that.
So if Canucks lose to Calgary, is the playoff dream officially over?
I didn't know we were dreaming playoffs, but yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually, it's
our playoffs been talking about the dream or the nightmare?
Well, I'm not saying it's a nightmare. You can't ever say it's a nightmare. If Canucks made the playoffs, I will be rooting for them so hard.
Okay, but is the nightmare missing by a point?
Yes, that's the nightmare.
Team 17?
Yeah, yeah. That's the absolute nightmare. Because if they make the playoffs, do you think they'll go very far? No, but no. I will be really hoping they do.
Well, okay, we say that, but then if the team makes the playoffs, you know how hot that team's going to be going into them? I wouldn't want to be a team having to take them on.
It's the Blues 2.0.
Yeah. Anyway, well, whoops. Well, I muted myself. Consider our thoughts. We'll take ourselves a short break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He didn't play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
I know this is half full, half empty, but did we really ever have a rewind? I mean, we kind of rewound it a bit, but I mean, this show is going well off the rails. I should just drop our off the rails intro music at the start instead of our normal, because that just seems to me how things are going. But you did have a fair point in half full, half empty. What can Tocchet accomplish? What limits him? And why does his head look more bald and more shiny with every game?
That's the most important
part. Well, first of all, I guess I was going to say he's on camera, but no, he was on camera in his previous gig. So I would imagine in his previous gig, he had to throw on like the makeup, you know, I don't know what it's called, where it dampens the shine.
Yeah.
I bet you the Canucks don't require that when he's on the bench. And therefore, depending on the lighting in the building that he happens to be in, it's just reflective.
I just feel like he had a tiny bit of hair when he started this gig.
Well, you know what happens if you coach the Vancouver Canucks, right?
Yeah.
Hey, I had a lot more hair when this podcast started, Anna.
Yeah, I really don't want to hair shame. I've just noticed it that every single press conference he gives, it's just like so stark. But yeah, we don't have a good record, really. Travis' hair went very gray over his period with the Canucks. Like, he went from like a sort of like older Mark Ruffalo to like Mark Ruffalo's really, really let himself go.
Oh dear.
That's not even an insult. Like, Mark Ruffalo.
No, I know, but I mean, the transition there is an interesting one. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what Canucks does to people. Like, John Tortorella wouldn't even live in the same country as this team when he coached them.
For the one season that he got here. Very true. But you know what can Tocchet accomplish? He's obviously singing a tune that has really inspired who we would have probably all classified as Jags at any point in the season.
Yeah.
I think we would still consider them Jags, though they're playing well above Jag level. And when you have Jags that are punching above their class and are paid as Jags, those are teams that generally do well.
Yeah.
Problem is, the Vancouver Canucks have a recent history of then finding very good value in Jag and taking that value and blowing it out of the water with crazy contract offers.
Yeah, that does happen. But like, yeah, just what he's gotten out of like Dakota Joshua, like Phil DiGiuseppe, like that's exciting. I think, which is weird to sort of even put that in the same sentence. He seemed very uninspiring when you like see him give press conferences. I'm sorry to say that. Like, compared to Bruce, he's not the like sparkling media personality. But his like system seemed to work, and yeah, the personality seems to work. He's getting a lot out of, like, what are just so-so players. Connor Garland, like, even having a resurgence as well.
Which, you know, as an aside, you had earlier talked about how their scuttlebutt, and it was Farhan reported it, was that OEL would not be bought out, but it has now turned sort of that spotlight onto a Garland as being the buyout target, which can you not tell me that there isn't a market for Garland in his resurgence under Tocchet? Like he is, and this is maybe a systems thing, maybe it's a coach thing, maybe it's just a confidence thing, who knows, but Garland is playing much more like the player we thought Garland would be when he arrived from the Coyotes.
Yeah. I mean, a buyout for Connor Garland seems just like, buyout is your last resort, is always like the drastic option, and that seems crazy to me that Connor Garland wouldn't have any trade value at like his current contract. Like, he's not cheap, but you know, he's under $5 million with only a couple of years left, so that would seem wild to me. But yeah, what Tocchet's doing like seems to work, like, as we kind of talked about it previously, the special teams thing, like, power play is bad, and it remains bad. Like, he's not a miracle worker. But he's still got Mike Yeo in charge of special teams, and yet the PK looks inspired, revitalized, because they've just changed it into a power kill.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's got to be something, because, yeah. I don't think Mike Yeo suddenly learned new skills and how to coach a better team. Like, that doesn't seem likely to me.
Well, it's not so much learning how to coach the team differently, but being allowed to coach the team differently.
Yeah,
possibly. You know, like, I'll use the Tortorella, you know, experiment that took place.
Experiment, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's really all it was.
Totally.
The Vancouver Canucks come out of the gate hot and heavy. He is playing Kessler and the Sedins pretty much every possible minute they can. They were getting Quinn Hughes minutes.
Yeah.
You know, in that start of the season. And ultimately, Kessler eventually, you know, breaks down. The Sedins are just, you know, dog tired. Injuries start to infect the team. The coach gets, what was it, a 10-game suspension after trying to infect the Flames. And, you know, all of this happens, but if we think about the season previous under AV was, you know, tried and tested to the pairs. Every pair had a, you know, spot they played here. The Steens would have never seen PK unless it was absolutely necessary. And it would have been late in the PK if the team happened to be down by one and needed that up, you know, like, so when you see that change in coach, the philosophy allows for that adjustment. And, you know, Bruce's style seemed to be more run and gun, whereas Tocchet's style is more systems and responsibility.
Yes.
And those who, you know, show that they are able to follow the system are therefore rewarded.
Yeah. And I think that's like a really good point. I'm just thinking about this interview Luke Shen gave us to, like, oh, you know, a lot of coaches have the same, like, skills, same systems, but it's a lot about personalities. But I think Tocchet is that good balance, right? Because take, for example, the transition game, which has improved massively under Tocchet. Part of that is the system of, like, carrying the puck up the ice, not just, you know, bailing as soon as you have the puck. But part of that is that idea of responsibility. That's like more of a, I don't want to say spiritual, but like that's more of a mentality thing, right? It's, you know, it is your responsibility as a forward to help transition the puck up the ice. And that is like a mental thing, like teamwork, togetherness, unity, flow, that kind of thing. I'm not trying to get too airy fairy here, but like it's the balance of both, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, as we've sort of talked about here, Canucks are well out of the Bedard lottery. I mean,
yeah,
we were able to dream, happy thoughts during some dark times, and now that the team's winning, those dreams are done. But they're doing what they have done in the past. They're looking to unearth talent, either out of Europe and or the NCAA. And, you know, I have to give the Vancouver Canucks credit. Over the past handful of seasons, they have unearthed talent going this route. Being that seems to be the focus, I can't say I have any issue with it. But can you truly build a team this way?
That's the thing. Like, I do think Canucks were maybe even ahead of the game in, like, digging into NCAA talent. Like, you know, when you have, like, Brock Besser drafted, and then, you know, you have the Troy Stetcher, like, alongside. Just a lot of, like, also drafting from the NCAA, like, Adam Gaudet, like, players like that just like really showed potential early on in their college careers. But it's just, it seems to me that that's just one element, right? Like, you're getting 22-year-old players, 23-year-old players, which is great, and Canucks seem to be exploiting that market. You can even have that as your, like, lean more heavily on that than other teams do, but like, you can't build a cup winning team without like drafting, and Canucks seem to be just letting that side of things get away.
Yeah. I sort of look at it as the draft is where you find the generational talent. Sure, you probably strike out more than you knock it out of the park. Whereas, like, the more mature player signings that you're getting out of the NCAA or out of Europe, these are players that work really well to go along with the generational talent you've developed on your own, you've got out of the draft, and help sort of build the meat of your team. And then you fill in the holes there, whether it be through free agency smartly and with the appropriately paid Jags.
Yeah.
I will not knock finding talent that way. Because the other, thing to consider is if you do find players through, these college signing or European Professional League signings, and then trade them for assets, you sort of help showcase them in the league and say, hey, here's something. Like, we thought Kuzmenko was likely going to go that route. We didn't think the Canucks could afford him. I'm happy he's coming back. Yeah. I hope this crazy shot percentage he currently has is something he keeps forever in a day, so he gets a 200-point season to knock Connor McDavid off his throne. But, I feel there's value. It's just that the Vancouver Canucks are going this route because they have left themselves with no other real alternative. Like, there's no build it out of the draft anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and let's look at, like, our most recent NCAA signing. Obviously, we did draft this player, but Aiden McDonough. Like, that was a player who maybe, like, Canucks had to work hard at. Like, it wasn't a dead set that he was going to sign with the Canucks. But, like, the player development staff the Canucks have is excellent. Like, Ryan Johnson, Chris Higgins, the Sedins, like, excellent. Every single, like, draft pick that signed with the Canucks or prospect, a lot of the Abbey players, they all talk about that. And, like, how are they going to get to do their job if you're just signing what you hope are ready-made players, you know?
Yeah. But if they do go this route, there are numbers like Sam Linsky, I think, would help on the blue line, especially if the Vancouver Canucks were to able to sign him for an appropriate amount of money. Puck moving defensemen are always nice to have. And if they're defensively responsible, yay. I think that's, where the Vancouver Canucks sort of have to prioritize is the blue line is an issue. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I also was working under the context that they thought they would buy out OEL, but if that's no longer the case, who knows? Maybe there's a team out there that wants Meyer still.
Yeah.
Because that's one of those contracts has to disappear for you to be able to go in and, and firm up your blue line, you know, NCAA or not.
But yeah, but let's be real. Like, Canucks can't make the same mistake they did before and sell the farm to get rid of a player that has, like, a problem player that has 1 year left on his contract. Like, yeah.
Oh, anyhow, that's stuff we can talk about more next week and in the weeks that come.
Some rumors flying around, so hopefully there'll be maybe more news next week.
Yeah. I have to ask you about something that's not in the rundown. You think John Garrett's retirement was John Garrett?
Yeah. It's what it is incredibly sad. Whatever the motivation is. I do worry that it was not entirely his idea.
It was odd. Like, I look at it this way. It was very odd as to where sort of it was positioned. I get it. Maybe it's given a swan song. But the goodbye felt very scripted.
Well, yeah.
Right? Like, that and I. And
I mean,
of course. If I thought I'd get emotional, I'd script it too, right? Help give myself the help I could get. But it was really weird. But there was a part of it that said, "Oh, you'll still see me in other Sportsnet-related properties."
Yeah.
Now, my old man was saying, "Oh, is that because is he going to another team?" And I hadn't really considered that. But then that would be weird, not to suggest it's not possible. I mean, he was Flames coverage and Leafs coverage before he was Canucks coverage, like, consistently. So, yeah. But it's – I just feel that that's – it was a decision that was not him, and I don't think it was the team. I think it was actually Sportsnet.
Yeah. I mean, Canucks are very short-sighted, but I don't see them – pushing out, like, pressuring Sportsnet to do that. Yeah, it seems wild to me. I know he's I did just check, he is 71. Like, on the one hand, you know, John Garrett, like, enjoy some time off, like, you've earned it, but on the other hand, it's just, like, will not be the same.
Yeah. Speaking of the Canucks being short-sighted, did you see Rob Simpson's article?
I haven't read it. I've seen some tweets and yeah.
So I'm going to presume that Simmer, who I don't think has actually been credentialed much, if at all, at the team, is never going to get credentialed ever again.
Yeah. I mean, surely you make your peace with that before publishing it.
Oh,
like that.
I'm certain that that's the case, but yeah, it's... It was an interesting read. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. It's an interesting read.
Yeah, I would say go check it out if you're kind of interested. But I would say the whole
VancouverHockeyInsider.com for those that don't know where to go.
Yeah.
But it's I say interesting read. It's also long.
Yeah, I think I might just stick to the excerpts that people tweet out.
Yeah, it is like, I don't know how to measure this long. That's like the technical term.
Yeah.
Anywho, and as we sort of look to wrap up, it doesn't seem a week goes by when we're not talking about the NHL and its teams getting in the way of itself. You know, many teams are doing Pride Nights, and we've seen a team like Chicago opt out of it by stating that they worried for their Russian players. Now, while I understand that that could be an issue, why is it not an issue for many other Russian players in the league? Is it just the Russian players in Chicago?
Yeah, I mean,
and it's not like, oh, you're Russian, you can't do it. It's the, oh, if you do it, this is what's going to happen back at home. This is going to break laws. Your family will get punished. And see, like, a lot of that I could actually conceive as being a real possibility based on the current, you know, geopolitical state of the world, specifically Russia. But
yeah, I think, honestly, weird to say this, Brian Buck said it best. Like, he doesn't understand that, like, the expert opinion is that the threat is not material to Russian players. So I think perpetuating that narrative that the Russian players are at fault or like the stem of this is harmful. But
yeah, sorry. And I'm not trying to suggest that it's just, that's the reasoning Chicago provided.
Yeah, no, I know. You're just quoting, but, what Brian,
and to make
said,
it very clear, there's also Canadians who are getting in the mix here.
Yeah, and I would say that, like, what Brian Buck said is that, like, but you're giving the players that want to wear it no choice. But to, like, if the Russian players want to sit out because they're worried about their family, it's hard to, like, criticize them, or it's hard to stop them from doing that. Like, of course. Like, I don't think, like Brian Buck, I don't think the threat is that serious, but yeah, you're giving, like, Chicago gave their players who wanted to do something, want to show their support, like, no choice. Mm-hmm. And, like, the bottom line is it's about inclusion. It's about making people feel welcome, saying everyone is welcome here. Every fan is welcome here. Every player is welcome here. And yeah, by, like, refusing to do that, like, yes, it's performative, but if you can't even do the performative gestures, like, where are you? Like, Carl Okposo spoke really well on this. One of their players decided to sit out Pride Night also, and he was very reflective about it. He spoke to a diversity expert and just was speaking that, like, what message does it send to closeted players? What message, like, does it send, like, to fans who are, like, they're circling, you know, if you're an LGBTQ fan, you're circling that game with your team thinking, like, oh, this is going to be great. This is, like, the one night where I can go to the game and not be worried about being, like, not have that small amount of worry that, like, I'm going to be made to feel not welcome.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think it's just lame. And
yeah, sorry,
go ahead. I have something to say. Well,
I was going to say, I'd referenced Canadians being equally at issue. You had the Stahl brothers down in Florida who, after many thoughts, prayers, and discussions, have chosen not to wear a Pride Night jersey. And that they, you know, carry no judgment on how people choose to live their lives. So the thing about Reimer's like, everybody love everybody, but I'm not going to, you know, wear something that I feel supports sin. The Stahls are like, we carry no judgment on how people choose to live their lives, which in its own implies that's a choice that someone has made, which it is not. And two, we carry no judgment whether you carry it or not. Who are you to judge?
Exactly. But like, that's the message they're sending, whether they can say, like, the message they're sending is they do judge.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, it's like, oh, people should be welcome in all aspects of the game of hockey. Well, that's cool. You've made it very clear in your mind.
Yeah.
No, they're not. Like, I mean, it's the words are empty. But the part that got me is that Eric Stahl, who has never worn a Pride jersey. Did you know that? He's never worn one ever. Nope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even when provided photographic proof, he has in Montreal, where, honest to goodness, if this had occurred in Montreal, I think there would be so many people who would say, you're disrespecting the jersey. Like, the logo on it, like, it would be more than a Pride issue, which in itself I think is an issue, but it would be like, you would be done. You'd be like traded out of the team. Like, you disrespected the logo on the front, which I feel in the world of hockey carries a much louder, you know, voice, disrespecting that logo. But it's gone to the point now where I think the NHL has to either tell its teams shape up or they just have to stop it. Because every night, this has now become an issue. It is international. It's casting the NHL in a very negative light.
Yeah. Well, here comes my promised shout out to Connor McBoring. He spoke up about it, and like, he's not had a great record when it comes to like sticking up for moral issues, but he said this. Also, Zach Hyman, I believe, spoke up about it and just said, like, you know, like, queer players are welcome here. Everyone's welcome in our locker room. Also, Matt Kachuk said that. And yeah, you have to say Ottawa, Calgary, and Edmonton are the only teams that have, like, really put themselves in any sort of positive light. San Jose have, like, did try their best considering the situation, but yeah.
When is the Canucks Pride Night?
So it's Friday. It's this Friday against Calgary.
Against the Flames. Because the team came out with a PR statement that we're looking for the many different ways to, it's like, oh, okay.
That sucks. Like, honestly, in that in this climate of uncertainty, why wouldn't you just say we're wearing them if you are? Like, it sucks. Like, if they don't wear them, I will be so disappointed. And I've been disappointed a lot of times as a Canucks fan, but this will be a big one.
Yeah, I will pass judgment, because who am I to judge? And I'm a hypocrite. We all know that. I will pass judgment, but it's so disappointing.
Yeah.
And I will respect everyone's ability to say, I don't want to do something, but you have to understand there are repercussions to your choice that you make. And, you know, we are who we are in many aspects of our lives. The issue here is not about choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyhow, says the cis male Caucasian who won the lottery of the cosmic variety and has been provided many advantages of the sort. But the fact is, I acknowledge that that's the case.
Yeah.
I recognize that I have had systemic advantages. Whether or not I've been able to cash in on them, I do not know. But I've been provided them.
Yeah. And I don't see how, like, I mean, all these players that are saying they reflected, you know, they thought about it, they talked with people. I'm just like, who did you talk to? Like-minded people, or you actually sought opinions of experts, like, or people actually affected by this? Yeah.
People. Thoughts. Prayers. Deep conversation, read a book, all that stuff. Anyhow, speaking of reading books, I finished Fighter.
Right. Yes. I actually had planned to post today in our book club channel on Discord, but I will do it tonight. So if you're listening to this, you will probably have already seen, but we have a book club channel on Discord. How'd you get to Discord? discord.io/c4podcast. If you're not there already, and why not, come hang out, come commiserate about the Canucks, come post your meals and we can critique them or critique your beer choice. But yeah, book club. We're talking about Fighter by Aaron Volpatti, and we'd love to know your thoughts and feelings.
Yeah, I'm going to share a few thoughts and feelings briefly here.
Yeah.
I wish I had read the book before he joined us, because, oh my goodness, would I have wanted to learn more about him and his life experiences and that. Like, I worked with what we knew.
Yeah.
Which, and then yeah, I read this fair, book.
I think the book had just come out, so.
Yeah, no, like, I don't think it had. When we interviewed him, it was not yet available. I think it had just printed, wasn't ready for sale. But my goodness, like, if you've heard us talk about Fighter and you're like, yeah, you know, wonder what's about, read the book. I know a few of you have. And again, let's have this conversation, what your thoughts are in C4 Book Club. We should probably also, as a group, talk about what is it that we'll read next.
Yes, we'll take votes. Have some ideas.
Yeah. But, yeah, discord.io/C4podcast, #C4bookclub. Anna, if, you know, hypothetically speaking, someone wanted to support the show and they didn't listen to us at the start of the show, what can they do and where can they go? Look at me put you on the spot.
They could go to support.c4podcast.com.
Boom.
Yes.
Nailed it.
Didn't look anything up. Nailed it. Okay, yeah, that's where you can go to support us through Buy Me a Coffee, although we prefer to call it Buy Us a Pint. Mm-hmm. But yes, as we said before, monthly, one-off, yearly, we would love anything you can throw our way. Yeah. So please do that.
Because it does help cover the cost of the show, which, again, the ads you hear during our show, if you hear them, we get nada from them. If it's not my voice and it's not Anna's voice, that's going to, like, the nefarious, you know, so big podcast people.
Feel free to skip.
Yeah. I don't know. Can you skip the ads? Like, are they skippable?
Yeah.
I've never tried. I don't listen to our show unless I'm not here. And I kid you not, I cheat because I have, like, the raw. I never listen to the actual app-driven podcast.
No, I do. And it, you can't skip. It's just the same as any. But it is interesting. There does seem to be more and more ads across, like, sports podcasts in general.
This podcast supports all these betting sites where you can go and lose your life savings.
Yeah. I will say, like, we, you know, like, once again, we're hypocrites. We have been supported, like, and recorded ad for betting companies in the past. I don't know if I could again. Especially after reading a little book recommendation here, Might Bite, by Patrick Hamilton. Very interesting book about gambling addiction. So, yeah.
Help us break free from Big Podcast Network, the nefarious conglomerate that has its claws in us and won't let us go.
Yeah, that's it.
You can find our entire back catalog at c4podcast.com, or most of it, because that's the other thing. The network only gives you a taste of it. If we can go and get our stuff in order and get this show independent again, maybe we can put the entire back catalog back into play. But we need your help to accomplish that, because unfortunately it costs cash to run a show. Not a lot of money, but it does, you know, cover, you know, the bills when you do, and it helps me ensure that I'm not making a choice between food on Baby Force's plate.
Wow.
Which, like, Chris Cook was chicken parmigiano and rotini with a side salad last night. I don't know if you saw pictures. That was a nom nom in C4 Discord.
Yep.
Correct. Man, I'm turning into a Michelin star chef. Sure, the Michelin star is given to me by, you know, Adam at Budget Auto just up the street with a Michelin tire and a gold star on it. But hey, counts.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Anna, any final thoughts, words, wisdom?
I will say, just related to what we talked about with Pride Night, whether or not you've seen the news today, like, you know, just have a good hard think. I would just urge the world at large have a good hard think, and I think most of our listeners would be on the right side of this, but about what's really the problem in this world today. And I don't think it's wearing rainbow sweaters for 20 minutes. I really don't.
I really need to give my thoughts first, because you always go with some very deep, powerful ones. And I feel that anything that I'm able to go and follow up with pales in comparison.
It's good to have yin and yang.
Yeah. So I'm just going to go into the wrap-up, which means if you want to find myself, Chris at Lightforce on the Twitters, or Anna, A4Say03, you can. We are at the C4 Podcast on Twitter and all across social media. And by the way, we out.